everyone. This is Dr. Spellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. As always, it's such a pleasure having you join me today. And this program is all about empowering women with truthful information so they can make the most informed decisions possible. And I always invite men to join in as well because the topics are so relevant for everyone, actually. And I do have a few announcements. I have a brand new website that should be online by the time you get the archives of this radio show. So I invite you to visit whatwomenmustknow.com. It's going to be bigger and better than ever with lots of articles, videos, interviews. If you opt in, you'll get several of my free special reports. And also, you will have access to my archives, which I send out every week, so you don't have to worry about finding them on your own or listening in to the show when you may be busy with other things. And this is a great way to catch all the information because I have such wonderful guests, and it is an opportunity to really expand one's horizons. Another thing I want to remind everyone, I do have a great Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. Please go over there, like it. I post things just about every day, all sorts of great tips and recipes and articles and studies. So it's a way to continue to stay on the leading edge of important information regarding your health and the health of those that you love. One more thing, I will soon be heading off down under. I have a very extensive 9-week lecture tour. So for all of those listeners who are listening in Australia and New Zealand, I want you to know I will soon be on my way, and I will be visiting Melbourne and Sydney, Canberra, the Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, Perth, and also Auckland. So it's a great tour, lots of great information to share with everyone down in Australia. And if you go to my website, What Women Must Know, I'll be sending out a special e-blast with my itinerary so you'll know what those events are and where to sign up and participate. And I really hope to meet as many of you as possible on this trip. I always love returning to Australia, and I have some amazing new information to share with everyone down there. So I hope to be seeing all of you very soon. Okay, so that's it for all the announcements. I want to share with you my guest who will be really expanding our horizons today. I have been reading and thoroughly enjoying his book. So let me just introduce my guest to you. First of all, it's Dr. Mario Beauregard. He is a PhD and associate research professor at the Departments of Psychology and Radiology and the Neuroscience Research Center at the University of Montreal. He is the co-author of The Spiritual Brain, which the official title is The Spiritual Brain's first book, and more than 100 publications of neuroscience, psychology, and psychiatry. His latest book is called Brain Wars, The Scientific Battle Over the Existence of the Mind and the Proof That Will Change the Way We Live Our Lives. And I have been thoroughly enjoying this book. I love books that help me expand my horizons, that allow me to realize there is a great power that exists within me, and that the journey here in this lifetime really is to reclaim the world of possibilities that exist within me and within each of us so we can achieve amazing, amazing things in our life. So I'm going to leave it there and going to, at this point, welcome Mario Beauregard to the show. Hello, Mario.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me today. I have been just enthralled with your book. It obviously resonates with me, as you could probably tell. And I just think the more science and publications like yourself, as a scientist, but who is also exploring the realms of consciousness, really help us in our daily lives create miracles of possibilities. So first of all, let me just ask you, how did you venture into this area of really, and you know, before we do that, I think it's really helpful to just read a little bit on the inside jacket of the book, because it says a lot. And here it goes. The brain can be weighed, measured, scanned, dissected, and studied. The mind that we conceive to be generated by the brain, however, remains a mystery. It has no mass, no volume, and no shape, and it cannot be measured in space and time. yet it is as real as neurons, neurotransmitters, and synaptic junctions. It is also very powerful. So, over to you, Mario.
Yes. Well, all started when I was a child, actually. I believe it or not, I started to reflect upon these issues, you know, the relationship between mind, consciousness, and brain when I was about 8 years old. And back then, I decided to become a scientist to investigate it later in my life. This fascinating issue. And so that was the starting point. And after that, in my own personal life, I've had a series of deep spiritual experiences. And so all these, you know, these insights and experience contributed to the kind of research I'm doing right now.
You know, there is so much going on the frontiers of brain research. We have access to technologies now that let us actually look inside the brain and see what's happening. So there's tremendous amount of information and knowledge that is being gained about the brain. What do you think some of the most important breakthroughs have been?
Well, with regard to neuroscience, probably the development of brain imaging tools like functional magnetic resonance imaging, positron emission tomography. These tools were developed, between 20 years ago. And they really transform the picture we have now with regard to how mental functions, higher mental functions like perception or memories or emotional feelings, self-consciousness, all those functions are associated with activity in various regions of the brain. So this gives us what we call a correlation. So a correlation is it's an association between something that is going on in the brain and versus something that is going on also mentally with regard to the subjective internal experience. However, it's important to note here that when we speak about these correlations, there's no causality involved. So that means that the hot spots that you were allowed to measure in the brain during various kinds of, you know, cognitive or affective tasks or even spiritual states, these hot spots do not mean that it's the brain that is actually creating these functions or these spiritual experiences. It only indicates that there's an association between what's going on mentally and what's going on in terms of brain activity.
And I think that's really such a key point that you're making in your book, and we're going to be talking about what you've written about and some of the amazing experiences that people have had and what we have seen, and as we investigate the possibilities that exist within all of us, because the brain is more, how would you call it? It's been called a computer. So in the mechanistic model, the brain was considered the computer, right? But that's changing now. At least in your perspective, it's changing. So how do we understand what the brain is and what's going on?
Well, to understand correctly, I think the role of the brain with regard to the higher mental functions and consciousness, one field of research that is particularly interesting is related to the so-called near-death experiences. Because in that kind of field, you can respond to the question, is it the brain that is producing these higher mental functions, or is it only associated with regarding consciousness and the other higher mental functions? So there's one instance of near-death experience that is quite interesting for us neuroscientists. It's when the near-death experience are induced during a state of cardiac arrest. Why is it interesting? It's because whenever there's a cardiac arrest, the brain activity will vanish after usually between 10 to 20 seconds. So if you're measuring, for instance, electrical activity using what we call an electroencephalogram or EEG, you will notice that the EEG becomes flat after the cardiac arrest very rapidly, within seconds. So in theory, according to contemporary neuroscience, in that kind of state, there shouldn't be any higher mental functions possible. What's interesting is that during the last decade, there have been about four different studies showing that over 100 patients during a state of cardiac arrest have reported complex mental functions and consciousness. For instance, they were able to describe what was going on during the reanimation procedure, dialogues between nurses and doctors or surgeons, and so on and so forth. And so this field of research, this kind of evidence, tell us that the brain is processing information related to what's going on internally in our bodies, also mentally, and also with regard to the external world, but it's not producing what we call mind and consciousness. It acts more like an interface, if you will.
So that's such a fascinating area as you explore mm-hmm. in many of your chapters, because if our brain is more the interface, it's receiving or processing
different kind of frequencies.
Of frequencies, yes.
Yes. So,
processing frequencies, right.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So most of the time, the channels you will synthesize are related to mundane things, what's going on externally, you know, in your environment, and, you know, things that are going on in your body, physiological processes, for instance, and also your thoughts, your emotions, and things like that. So there's the brain is processing information regarding all this, but it's not creating the source of your mental functions, your mind, your consciousness, your sense of self, your capacity to self-regulate yourself, to self-determinate what you're doing or thinking, you see? So it's a complete reversal of the main dogma of neuroscience that we've been that has been around for over 100 years now. So it's like if you take a radio, for instance, you're listening to a radio program and you are hearing somebody talking like we're doing right now. If you look inside your radio set, you're not going to find the people who are chatting, you know, who are having exchange, because the source is not there. It's external to the radio station or the radio your radio device. So I think it's a good analogy. Same thing, we can use the television station also. If you modify electronic components within your TV set, you will alter the reception of the program. So you may influence the sounds, the reception of the sounds, or the pictures. You can experience a distortion of the pictures. Yet the people, for instance, who are part of the program that you're watching are not within your TV set. Because this is a common objection of skeptics and pseudo-skeptics when they will tell you, how do you explain that when there's a lesion in a specific portion of the brain, there's a deficit that will follow the lesion? Well, that's how we can explain this phenomenon. You see, you were only creating interference. So the processing of information is not as efficient as before, and you cannot perhaps synthesize other frequencies if your interface is impaired.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I know, you know, some of the recent research I've been looking at in terms of obesity, and that shows that actually, if you're overweight, you start reducing the size of the brain and aging the brain. If you're obese, you reduce the size of the brain even more, and you age even more rapidly in your brain, which means you're compromising all the functions of the brain. So you're starting to exhibit all sorts of abnormal or dysfunctional behavior.
Exactly.
Just an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have more cravings. So, you know, the thing that fascinates me about looking at the whole topic of the brain and consciousness is really the reminder that we have such great powers available to us to transform and heal. And I want to talk about some of the chapters because I really would like you to share information to inspire everyone listening
to realize that we have a capacity to overcome anything, to heal anything, to transform any situation in our life. This is our true essence, the true destiny for us. And we have to understand that this is available to all of us. It first takes, I would say, a paradigm shift to first of all accept that you do have a power, even though you don't necessarily know what that means or how to access it. But we need to talk a bit more about some of the things you've written about to just really remind people of a capacity that exists within them.
So we can talk about, for instance, the placebo effect. This is a good illustration.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, well, a placebo effect is a physiological effect that is created by a fake treatment, a treatment that is not effective from a medical point of view or from a physiological perspective. But it can be very, very powerful. So during the last 10 years, there's been a number of brain imaging studies that have shown that placebo effects can totally transform what's going on in the brain. For instance, there was a very interesting study done some years ago by a neurologist in Vancouver. It was a study about Parkinson's patients, Parkinsonian patients. In Parkinson's disease, there's destruction of the nerve cells, the neurons in the brain that are producing a chemical messenger that is called dopamine. Dopamine is the key chemical messenger in motor function, but it's also involved in all sorts of other functions. So in that specific study, they use a scanning technique called positron emission tomography, and they measured the activity specifically of dopamine after the patients received the placebo treatment, which was a sugar pill. And in that study, those patients who most believe in the fake treatment, the placebo treatment, started to produce dopamine in their brains at the same level than young, healthy people. Yet these patients had a destruction of the nerve cells producing dopamine of about 75% to 80% in their brain, so that was quite dramatic. And when they started to produce dopamine like this, they markedly improved from a clinical perspective. So they started to be able to move in a much better way. They felt better cognitively. They were more optimistic, and so on and so forth. So this is a very spectacular demonstration that what you believe and your expectations about a treatment, even if it's not effective at all, well, they can change in a very striking way what's going on in your brain and also in all the physiological systems that are connected to your brain, for instance, the immune system, the endocrine system, even gene expression, actually.
So our beliefs and our attitudes trump physiological processes, or can trump physiological processes, or can alter physiological processes.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yes, and so this is not the only study. Many other studies have been done, and it's very impressive. And you have the reverse effect, which is called the nocebo effect. So it's if you're anxious about the outcome of you taking a specific treatment or pill, something like that, you can generate negative side effects even though you're only taking distilled water or sugar pill. So we have examples of this. And in some cases, people who believed they were suffering from cancer, but they were not, died from this. So the effects of this, of beliefs and expectations, can be dramatic.
So it just reminds me how important it is to choose your thoughts, be around supportive, optimistic people and environments and communities, because we can be programmed, or we can accept programming in either direction.
Mm-hmm.
Which will affect how our brain processes those mm-hmm. thoughts and attitudes and what manifests in our body. And the more we listen to, naysayers or mm-hmm. Whatever kind of negative advertising mm-hmm. In the media, wherever it is, unconsciously we may actually be programming ourselves to experience some of those
yes,
negative
exactly.
responses.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what does that say about pharmaceutical drug testing, clinical trials?
Well, yes, during the last few years, there have been a few studies showing that, you take the case of the antidepressant medications, much of their effects are due to the placebo phenomenon. So they are not, if you compare their true efficacy versus placebo effect, they're not better than placebo, actually. So
what does that say about this whole industry that's built on clinical trials and a double-blind crossover studies? What does it say about this model that we're working with?
They're in big trouble. So the placebo is a big problem for them financially, because they invest millions and even billions of dollars in certain drugs. And now we're realizing that these drugs are not really more efficient than placebos. So it represents a big threat for the drug industry, this placebo phenomenon.
Because it's really a false paradigm. I mean, if you take a drug and you're told it's going to help you, it could be the placebo effect. In fact, I think it's the statistic is 20%.
30.
Is it 30% of proof?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tremendous percentage of people who respond just because of placebo.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So
it
it's a myth. So we're really this belief that we can have a very sterile scientific environment and create observable results is a myth. It's mm-hmm. operating out of an old model. We're really understanding that our thoughts and beliefs and our attitudes and expectations are profoundly impacting what response goes on, consciously or unconsciously, mostly unconsciously.
Yes, totally. But, in the biomedical field, many scientists and researchers are still entertaining the view that mind and consciousness are simply electrical and chemical processes in your brain, and they do not have any efficacy. They are powerless.
Right.
So it's very sad to see that, because it's true that there's a lot of money involved, and that can explain the resistance. There's a lobby, but there's an increasing number of studies, evidence showing that's not true at all. That's what we call my mental processes, like beliefs, expectations, or emotional feelings. It's very, very powerful, and it can alter really in a dramatic fashion what's happening in our brains and our bodies.
So why do you think it is sad, Mario?
Well, because the picture they present to the media and to the general population is that they are sophisticated biological machines that are, they produce the product of millions of years of evolution, but powerless machines that we're totally determined by our genes, our neurons, our chemical messengers in the brain, by also what's going on externally. We're like robots. We don't have any capacity for self-determination, no free will, and so on and so forth. And so it's totally wrong. And it has very detrimental consequences for people if they believe in such a negative and biased view.
I mean, it really seems to me that if we buy the mechanistic view that our brain is like a computer and everything's there, and of course everything we've been talking about, a pharmaceutical world mm-hmm. and a scientific world that thinks you can control everything and you can predict, that model seems to me to generate a perception, a cultural perception, that we are powerless,
right,
that we are at effect of things around us, and it, mm-hmm, it keeps us, in a sense, prisoners of the potential and the power, mm-hmm, that exists within us all. It's like in the Matrix, you know, keeping us in, mm-hmm, this place of illusion, of power and control, rather than stepping out and seeing who we really are.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Well, we need to take a quick break, so why don't we just pause here? I am talking to Mario Beauregard, who is the author of Brain Wars, The Scientific Battle Over the Existence of the Mind, and the Proof That Will Change the Way We Live Our Lives. So stay tuned, because we have more fascinating information to share with you. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are having a really interesting conversation today with Mario Beauregard, who is Associate Research Professor at the Departments of Psychology and Radiology and the Neuroscience Research Center at the University of Montreal. He is the author of Brain Wars, The Scientific Battle Over the Existence of the Mind and the Proof That Will Change the Way We Live Our Lives. And this really is a profound conversation. So, Mario, talk to us about meditation and the importance, mm-hmm, of meditation in helping us to really access this power to heal, to transform anything going on within, mm-hmm, our lives.
Yes. In recent years, I would say during the last decade, there's been a dramatic increase in terms of the brain imaging studies that have been done, which with respect to different types of meditative practice. And what we found overall is that for the meditative practice related to specifically to attention, we can modify the way the brain regions and the brain circuits related to attention. Well, we can modify the way they operate. And not only that, but we also now have evidence that we can even change the structure of the brain in terms of the gray matter and the white matter related to these brain regions associated to attention. And now there are other brain imaging studies showing that the same is true for regions of the brain related more to altruism and compassion, because when people practice for a long term, some mental training exercise related specifically to what the Buddhists call loving kindness, for instance, and compassion, you have the same phenomenon in the brain. So you can change them, the way they operate, so you improve their functioning of these regions, but you can also transform their structure. It's the same principle. It's this phenomenon is related to what we call neuroplasticity. So it's the power of the mind and the brain to transform, to optimize in terms of functioning. And at the same time, there are more psychological studies showing that these practices are very beneficial in terms of cognitive functioning, for instance, for attention and concentration, but also for the emotional well-being. For instance, if you practice for a certain period of time meditation that is associated to compassion, you will feel better. There are studies showing that you will feel better psychologically, but you will also optimize the functioning of physiological systems connected to your brain. For instance, the immune system, the endocrine system that are related to our hormones. And now there's also evidence showing that it would be beneficial even at the level of gene expression. So genes that are related to emotional well-being are turned on, and genes that are associated to anxiety and mood disorders are turned off when you practice these forms of meditation training exercises.
You know, that's amazing. Do you? So number one, I want to ask you: do you think that any type of meditation or relaxation exercises would do this?
There's not been studies done with regard to all the various types of practice, so we don't know yet. But the type of meditation practice that have been most investigated so far, they are related to Buddhism. So there are Buddhist types of meditation. But I would guess that yes, the same would apply. For instance, there's one study regarding the expression of gene that has been done at Harvard, and it was related to a form of relaxation training that has been developed by Herbert Benson, famous researcher. And so it's not exactly the same type of meditation than Buddhist form of meditation, yet it seems to be also very beneficial. And there are also other types of studies showing that you can boost your immune system, and also you can boost your endocrine system if you practice other types of mental exercise, for instance, visualization, you know, mental imagery, and also some relaxation techniques. So overall, these findings suggest that these various forms of meditation and relaxation and mental imagery techniques can be very beneficial psychologically, but also at the physiological level. You can really improve what's happening in your body and in your mind by practicing these exercises.
And I think that is another piece of information that people really mm-hmm. need to understand, how profound it is to take on some sort of practice. It could be you know, just a relaxation
mm-hmm.
CD that somebody gets. It could be a meditation course. You know, there's so many options available
yes.
to us
mm-hmm.
at this point. The thing is, you have to find something that you resonate with and stick to it. You know, it's like anything. It's a training. You have to retrain your whole neurology to respond, to fire in a different way. I don't know if those are the right words I'm talking about.
Well, no, it's very good, because it's very similar to if you go to the gym. So it's a sort of a neurological gym, a brain gym, when you practice these techniques, actually. Yeah.
I've been working with a system called HeartMath. Have you come across
yes,
that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. They have the HeartMath Institute, and they developed this, I guess, type of, would you call it biofeedback or neurofeedback?
Yes, it's a form of biofeedback, right.
That's really working with the heart, or making you focus into mm-hmm. that heart compassionate center, which they say has what, 100 times, or maybe is it 10 times more communication that goes from the heart to the brain than the brain to the heart?
Yes.
So the heart is such a key part of our of this place within us that is altering our consciousness. Maybe that's why the Buddhists have used loving compassion as such a
mm-hmm.
key energy
yes.
frequency in their work.
Yeah, they were aware of that even thousands of years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you think we've evolved, right?
mm-hmm.
In some ways, I think we have devolved, not evolved, because there have been cultures for thousands of years that have understood this power, and somehow we have gone astray. You know, we're starting to reawaken again.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I your book and your research, of course, is helping us do that. So tell us more of what you found out and written about in your book that will.
Yeah. Well, another good example of how powerful our minds can be is what we call neurofeedback. So it's another form of biofeedback, but in neurofeedback, the goal is to learn how to control your own brain activity. So usually it's done with sensors that are put on the scalp, and these sensors pick up electrical activity of your brain, and the electrical activity that is measured is coupled to video games. So you can have, by watching a computer screen, you can have an idea of what's going on in specific portions of your brain, and that's how you can learn to control this activity. So, for instance, you can have a game where there's a racing car, and the goal is to make this car move. And whenever you're in the right zone from an electrical perspective, you're producing the right brain waves at the right moment, the car will advance. And when you leave that zone, you're out of focus, the car will stop. So, and there's also music that comes that is associated with also the visual display. So you have a feedback. You receive a feedback in a visual form and also in an auditory form. And so that's how you can learn quite rapidly to control specific forms of brain activity. So now it's used for clinical purpose. It's in particular, it's very efficient with kids suffering from attention deficit disorders with hyperactivity. There have been many, many studies published, I think, during the last 20 years now, showing that there's a marked clinical improvement in children, ADHD children, practicing neurofeedback. It's so successful that very often they will leave their medication. They don't need the psychostimulant drugs anymore. And we know that these drugs have very detrimental effects on the, you know, the growth of the brain and of the body, and many, many negative side effects. So it's a very good news. And now there, it's used also in adults suffering from anxiety disorders or mood disorders, and it can be very successful. It's also used now by professional athletes to optimize their performance from a cognitive perspective. So it's used by, for instance, golfers, baseball players, now soccer players, and in Europe especially. And in United States, even by some basketball players and football players now. And they can tell that after a few months of using neurofeedback, their performance on the field can increase markedly. So it's another illustration of how we can, using our minds, we can control what's going on in our brains and in our body.
So would this be something helpful for post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, there are a few studies that are currently going on, so we'll see. But there's already been one study, I think it was done nearly 20 years ago, with veterans from Vietnam, and the results were quite encouraging. They're quite positive, and so now they are, you know, more systematic studies are being done to see if it could be used on a wider scale with people suffering from PTSD.
So kids with ADHD have, so their brain isn't firing properly. The right communication is impaired in some way, right?
Yeah, in some areas of the brain, you have too much slow waves. So the in the most anterior portion of the brain, that we call that the prefrontal cortex, so that will create a problem in terms of behavioral inhibition. They have trouble to self-regulate themselves. That's why they are very impulsive. And at the same time, they can produce fast waves in other regions of the brain, too fast, and so they can be very anxious also. So you have to try to adjust these things. So you can put sensors over these various regions, and in some case you will ask them to increase certain type of brain waves, And in the other case, you will ask them to decrease activity in another part of the brain. And usually after 40 sessions, most kids will leave, will don't need their medications anymore.
So do people have to go to a practitioner? Are these technologies available?
Yes, and in United States right now, you have I think over 7,000 practitioners.
Wow.
So yeah, it's easy in terms of availability now.
Where would people go to find out who would be a practitioner in their area?
You can consult. There's a website, also, and it's also a scientific association. It's called ISNR. So if you enter, you Google ISNR, you will get there, and they have a directory of practitioners in the various states.
ISNR?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. What about you?
It's International Society for Neurofeedback and Research.
Okay. Are there units available? I mean, do you think things like HeartMath, that technology?
Well, yes, because very often these practitioners will at the same time will practice biofeedback. So they will use techniques developed by HeartMath, for instance, and so they work at both levels, you know, in terms of self-regulation of the brain and also self-regulation of the periphery of the body, the physiological systems related. So they can teach you, for instance, how to modify heart rate variability. So that's what HeartMath is doing. They can also learn to increase the temperature in your hands and so on and so forth. And so this is related to, so the goal is emotional well-being, you know, when you use these tools.
So Mario, if kids with ADHD or ADD have these, you know, you can see the brains that are out of balance, too stimulated, too slow, the brainwaves, and they can get changes happening by practicing things like neurofeedback, why couldn't any kind of brain disorder be improved?
Well, it's now neurofeedback. You have clinicians that are using neurofeedback with other types of problems. And there's clinical evidence now that it can be beneficial for a wide variety of problems. However, this has not been validated scientifically, you know, we don't have all the answers yet, but the clinical evidence suggests that it really can be used for all kinds of problems, all kinds of psychiatric and neurological disorders. So it seems that it's a technique that has a lot of potential. And it's a very significant development, I think, from an evolutionary point of view, because it's the first time in the history of human species that you can record your own physiological activity and you can take control. You can learn how to control it. You know, so in principle, it could be applied to all sorts of organs and functions in the body. For instance, you could have sensors measuring the activity enzymes in your liver, and in theory, perhaps it's possible to learn how to influence these enzymes, you know, and to perhaps using nanobots or, you know, nanotechnology eventually. So we don't know the limit of this capacity to self-regulate the activities in our brain and our bodies.
Can you talk a little bit about hypnosis? You have a chapter about it.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of confusion about what it is and what a very powerful tool it can be.
Yeah, well, now the research seems to indicate that all forms of hypnosis are in reality self-hypnosis. So it's the subject, the client, if you will, that with accepting suggestions. So if you don't want to accept suggestions to enter into a light form of altered state of consciousness, it will not work. So that's one important finding. But if you're willing to do that, and you're so you can get there, and in that kind of state, it seems that you can do all sorts of things also. It's true that there are individual differences across the population. So in some cases, people can access deeper deeper alterations of the state of consciousness. For other people, it's more difficult to get there. And it seems that the deeper you go, the more profound the changes can be. Either in terms of activity in your brain or in your body, the connected physiological systems, and also from a psychological point of view. So there are very interesting studies showing that you can even produce structural alterations in the body. For instance, in terms of the time it takes to heal or repair bone fractures. There have been studies done about that. Also studies about pain perception. So for some people, they can undergo, you know, very painful form of surgery without any medication, anesthesia. This is quite remarkable. And it's another nice demonstration of how powerful our minds can be.
Well, that's really the message of your book. So in the last remaining minutes, what is the most important message you want to share with people, how they can, what your research is showing, so they can really change their lives?
Yes. So two things I would say. First, we're not biological robots totally determined by our genes, our neurons, our chemical messengers. This is not true at all, because there's lots of evidence showing that, in fact, it's the contrary. So that's very important, because when you realize that, you can totally transform your life. Second, we're not encapsulated within our brains. So our mind, our consciousness, is a non-local phenomenon. It's extended within space or across space. And also it's outside time. And this validates the insights of the various spiritual traditions. Because when people undergo transcendent or mystical experiences, that's what they realize. And the studies that we talked about at the beginning of the interview regarding near-death experience in state of cardiac arrest, these studies, these evidence really show that mind and consciousness are not created by the brain. So you're connected. This means that you're connected with the whole of humanity. You're connected to the entire universe. This is very, very important. And this explains why we can have exert an effect outside of our bodies. So we can influence the growth of plants. We can influence, physiological processes in animals and also in humans. This has been done by so-called psi researchers like Dean Radin, for instance, or Marilyn Schlitz. They've done a lot of work during the last 30 years, I would say, showing very convincingly that our minds are not located within our brains. So we have a tremendous, we're grand beings. We have a lot of potential. We can do amazing things if we realize that.
So what would you suggest people do? What would be some practical steps that you would recommend to people to begin to realize and access this power that we have? That's a phenomenal power to heal, transform, change anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could work on very specific objectives. For instance, you can use mental imagery. If you want to see the shape of your brain or your body, if you want to see it transformed, you can do that. You can practice that for a number of weeks or a few months. You can do little experiments, you know, with very specific goals to see how you you can, you know, influence what's happening in your body and your brain. And so that's one thing. You can practice meditation for a while and see how you can optimize the way your body is functioning, and also how you're better psychologically, you know, emotionally. You can also, you know, try other kinds of experiments where you know, you're opening yourself to other realms of reality, you know, other spiritual realms, and you'll see that very often the nature of your dreams will change. You will be able to enter into contact with, you know, unseen levels of reality. So if you change your outlook and you allow yourself to be able to experience these things, you will be able, without any doubt, because that has been the experience of people throughout history, throughout human history. And now science is starting to confirm, you know, these insights and to better understand these experiences. So really, literally, you can totally change your life, you know, and transform your outlook regarding what is the meaning of the human life and where humanity is heading for.
And I just want to reiterate, if people are feeling stuck, frustrated, mm-hmm. they're dealing with health issues, you know, so you feel like you're trapped, right? And there's mm-hmm. no out. But if you
yes.
were to, if someone were just to practice a simple meditation, you can just mm-hmm. get a CD, you can just get them on the internet. I mean, there's all sorts, they're readily available, freely available.
Mm-hmm.
But if people could just start doing something like that, or just doing a simple meditation, I guess,
yes.
with just deep breathing, that begins mm-hmm. to change processes,
yes.
they could find answers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is such an inspiring conversation, Mario. I really mm-hmm. want to thank you for the great work you're doing mm-hmm. and the wonderful book you've written, Brain Wars, The Scientific Battle Over the Existence of the Mind and the Proof That Will Change the Way We Live Our Lives. Do you have a website, Mario, before we leave?
Yeah, it's Dr. Mario Beauregard .com.
Okay.
So this is my... my personal website.
Okay, yeah. Dr. Mario Beauregard. Mario, all the best with you and your wonderful work. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks to you.
Bye now. And thank you all for listening. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self and learn how to meditate. Bye for now.